Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Giggle. We're live.
Stop, Giggle.
We're live on Blog Talk Radio. I haven't done this in so long. Oh my God.
I know. It's been, did we do one during the pandemic?
Yes, we did. I feel like because we spoke to the astrologer and then never spoke to anybody again. I think it probably depressed us so much that we just couldn't even be back.
Well, no, we did Stuart, right?
We did Stuart. Okay, yeah. So we did Stuart and Virginia.
And then Eric Rutherford.
Yes. All right. So we did three. Look at that. Maybe we should repeat. Woohoo! We got to, like, make it more often. So for those of you or anyone who's listening right now, this is it's Beth Feld and Jeremy Murphy. We are publicists, authors, writers, sarcastic, funny, gossipy, you got it. We do whatever we can do, and we like to laugh a lot. So does that explain us pretty well?
It does.
Well, good. I'm glad. So we've had a lot going on, or at least you have, in the last several months since we spoke with one of our last guests. So Jeremy has a book coming out, and and he's like all the rage with conservative media.
It's crazy. So the book is called F Off Chloe, Surviving the OMGs and FMLs in Your Media Career. And it's a humor book about the cultural divide between young and old in the workplace. And one of the elements I talk about is young people coming in very idealistic and entitled and very woke. You know, they have their demands and, you know, what they want is, you know, they're very social minded and they want companies to be just as. So one of the elements I make fun of very gently, but I still make fun of them, is woke. And conservative media has seized on this. And they're asking me to do all these radio and TV interviews and talk about anything woke. So it has been an interesting journey.
Well, especially since, I mean, it's so funny because the fact that I remember the whole Trump years where we were just so down on life. We thought that the world was going to implode and there was just so much doom and gloom. We thought, you know, there's no way anyone's going to survive this. And we were totally on board the Hillary Clinton train. So I know that both of us were. So even though you're going on conservative radio, the reality is you are in the, you know, you definitely were in the camp of, you know, again, the anti-Trumper, but I think you and I both kind of lost our, I don't know, we just, I don't want to say lost respect for people, but it got to a point where the progressiveness of life just got to be a bit much, right? It was just too much.
Yeah, they went overboard. And, you know, I'm still a Democrat, but I do feel like they're pushing me to the center because it's gotten out of control. And the one issue I have with wokeism, by the way, if you look at the issues, I support the issues. Like, I'm a big believer in LGBTQ. Of course, we want people with disabilities to have access to anything. Diversity, you know, done right, is a great thing. So there are a lot of things I agree with. My issue with the whole wokeism is attaching moral judgment to someone who doesn't agree with you.
I know.
And my issue is we can't agree to disagree anymore. Someone has to be the bad guy. Someone has to be the villain. Someone has to be the racist or the homophobic or the sexist. We can't just say, you know what, you feel this way, I feel that way, let's call it a day. Someone always has to be the bad guy. And that is the problem with wokeism.
Yeah, well, and I think it's also a generation of people that of kids where the parents said they could do no wrong. And they're always right. And I, being a Gen Xer and having kids that are actually in this, you know, they're not, my kids aren't millennials, they're Gen Zs. So I guess the Gen Xers were probably like, you know, we smacked down our Gen Zs and I'm not saying we smacked them, but we just were like, come on now, you know, we hear what you're saying, but as opposed to the, oh, everything you're saying is right, and you be you, and it's all good, and, you know, we're so happy for everything and anything you say and do. And sometimes that doesn't necessarily have to be the case.
No, you know, but the problem is these kids have too much self-esteem, and it's because they got trophies for showing up. Like, no one ever loses anymore. And I remember as a kid, you know, I had to play t-ball, and one year my mom signed me up for soccer. And when you lost, you lost. And you felt like crap. Mm-hmm. And it was a good learning lesson, because guess what? Feeling like a loser is not something fun. So
right.
It really builds character, because you never want to feel that way again. You're going to work harder. Well, if everybody gets a trophy, now you come to expect that. And that's what the problem is these kids, that's all they hear. They get a trophy for going anywhere. The parents tell them they're superstars. And then social media, it gets worse, because they're now living on likes and shares and comments and followers. So they come into the workplace feeling like they're celebrities.
Yeah.
And they get very angry when, you know, every word they say is not memorialized.
You know what? It's so true, because now on social media, you've got these kids getting paid $100,000 for doing a TikTok.
Yep.
It's
yep.
crazy how the whole work ethic has been turned on its head. And it's very difficult for people that were told throughout their lives, work hard, pursue what it is that you want, but really, you know, get training in it, and then you'll be successful. And those people are being marginalized now, which is just sad.
And the other problem we have is we've weaponized wokeism, where if someone feels a certain way and you don't, now you can cancel them, or you can call HR. You know, someone says you look nice today. Stalker, I'm calling HR. You know, we're giving people the tools to, do bad things. And if you don't like somebody now, you have the means to, you know, if you feel someone is, you know, inappropriate, you could end their career.
Yeah, it's really sad. And it's funny, because I've had the discussion, you know, I jokingly say to my daughter, you know, when I was her age, if I'd walk down the street and a construction worker would whistle at me, I'd turn and I'd say, thank you. And my daughter will say, that's disgusting. I'm like, what?
I remember, like,
what's the problem?
Exactly. I mean, that's what that's how we grew up with. Like, you were just flattered that someone noticed you, and it wasn't, it was a human interaction, right? That was a natural interaction. A man likes the way a woman looks and, you know, whistles or tells her, you know, you're looking great. Well, now that's a crime. You can't do that.
Exactly. And yet then in the same vein, you've got all these dating apps where guys are not being chivalrous at all. It's just total hookup culture, and that's okay. And that pisses me off. It's like, how about being romantic and taking someone out on a date and doing something where you actually show that you care, as opposed to it being a booty call? And like, but that's okay. Whistling on the street, that's a problem. Like, that's insane. Yeah.
You know, it is, I don't even know how to talk about this anymore. You know, I just think we're in dangerous territory where we just can't debate things anymore without someone getting canceled.
Yeah, well, and speaking of that, so I know that you have, I texted you today that I was binge watching the finale for The Morning Show.
Right.
And you didn't like the final episode of the finale this year. So, but it is all about being canceled, and it really is so interesting, because it you do one wrong thing. I mean, this is, of course, it's like, you know, it's all about Matt Lauer, the story.
Right.
Although, you know, he's still around, so, you know, at least he didn't, like, you know, don't want to do a spoiler, but at least he didn't, you know, drive off a cliff by accident.
Right.
But it was just interesting. I mean, I feel like this particular season, I mean, I thought Jennifer Aniston was fantastic, you know, just
right.
how she changed in this whole thing. And And I look forward to the next season because it seems like she's going to turn out to be, you know, this hero after, or heroine after all is said and done.
You know, it just felt like the whole thing felt very claustrophobic to me because it just kept weaving in and out of different storylines. And, you know, a lot of it wasn't wrapped up. And, you know, the lawsuit with Hannah, like, where did that go? Did that get settled? I don't remember that.
Well, no, I don't. I doubt it is. It's still going on because that other guy's still alive, but he's the one who videotaped her at the funeral. And of course, for those of you who watched it, there's like always sinister stuff that goes on. What I did find that was interesting, though, and I wanted to ask you, there was the woman from Italy that played like the documentarian and sort of the love interest for Steve Carell. Was she like a star from like the 80s or something? Like, I feel like she was famous. Like, every time I looked into her eyes, I felt like I saw like that she was somebody that we might have known from years ago. And I don't know. Or am I just like making it up?
You know, I don't know, but she's fantastic.
Right? She was so good.
I really liked her. She's so human. And I really liked that interaction with him and her, and I really felt like when he drove off the cliff, I was really disappointed because I thought that she could save him.
Yeah.
And like bring out, get him to be a better person and give him some salvation.
Yeah.
And the cliff thing was just, I don't know. It just seemed a little out of character to me. But,
yeah, well, because he seemed like he had something to live for, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he's, like, going off the cliff, you know? And then at, like, one point, because he's in Italy driving, and then Alex is in Italy driving at the same time, you're thinking, what, are they going to crash into each other? Like, what is this?
Right. Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I just kind of feel like there is something about her. And I thought when she was interviewing him, I really thought she was going to screw him over with that video. But she took the high road.
I did too, and I was so happy she didn't.
Yeah.
Because I thought, like, you know, when you're in that darkest moment, I felt like no matter what he's done, he's like, you know, he's kind of working it out, right? And sometimes you need something like that, like you need a human to connect with you and to get down there with you and bring you up. And I just felt like if she had screwed him over, that would have been heartbreaking.
I know. And that's what I was waiting for. I thought that's how what they would do with the episodes, but they obviously took it in a totally different direction. But it was very smart, you know, just how they tied in the whole COVID thing and, of course, how it was ran rampant in Italy first. And, it'll be interesting. I binge watched, I would say, like probably 6 hours last week. I really got into it. I did. I was like, I couldn't. It was like I had to keep doing it. And now I have to tell you, so I just bought Going There by Katie Couric. I did.
I read it.
You did?
I finished it.
Oh, my God. So I'm bringing it with me to Florida because I figured it'll be good reading on the plane, but I just started it. So what did you think?
I was actually really surprised at how honest and candid and funny it was.
Mm-hmm.
I always knew she had a wit, that she had a good sense of humor. I just didn't realize, how clever she was. And the other thing is, you know, we were at CBS when she was there, and it was really unique to see it from her perspective. And
Well, and you knew her more than me because I had already left the network, I think, or I was there for a few years and then I left. But she, it's very difficult when someone has already had the pinnacle of their career and then they're trying to still rebuild and it never comes close to what it was, you know?
Well, this is interesting. And I was actually going to write an op-ed about this, but I decided not to. So in the book, she writes about the Photoshop diet. Remember that?
Yes.
Okay. So that was my magazine. And I remember a certain boss said she didn't look like herself. You know, when you're like photographed straight front, like it's not a good angle.
Yeah.
She was wearing something that was not flattering. So the photo made her look a lot bigger than she actually is. So a certain boss told me to Photoshop the photo. And so someone in our photo department did it and we ran it. And some very, very, very evil person found the original photo.
Oh, geez.
And they leaked it. And it became front page news. I'll never forget walking to work one day, and it was on the front page of the New York Post. And it was how TV queen Katie Couric lost 20 pounds without even trying. Then they revealed me because somebody at CBS, someone, you know, the swooper, I won't mention his name, but leaked it, that I did it. But, you know, everybody thought it was silly, but now I'm reading this book, and I didn't realize she had an eating disorder.
Right, right.
And she struggled with her weight. And all of a sudden, I'm reading this, and I just, like, it was like a knife to the stomach. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I had no idea. Now I feel, like, horrible.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I mean, you know, the few times that I met her, I felt like she had a bit of an edge to her. You would think that she was going to be warm and fuzzy and all of that, and she wasn't. She wasn't like, you know, Meredith Vieira gives off that vibe. She doesn't give off that vibe. But then as you're reading her book, you understand why. And she always had, like, I guess she was always sarcastic and funny and edgy, and she was put into this system box. And that was not her. So, and I was reading about the whole eating disorder thing that she had from the time she was young. Like that does, I mean, as someone who has struggled with my weight my whole life, absolutely, it really can do a number on you. But the sad part is, I remember the people at CBS News were ruthless. They were always leaking negative stories about each other. They were disgusting. So it had to have come from them. But it's just
that place is such a snake pit.
Yeah.
And I remember dealing with them, and it was always, I mean, you know, the problem was they had all these old timers there, and then they also were unionized. And then they had such animosity for anybody who was making a certain amount of money. So they instantly hated her.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't like, you know, newcomers. And I just remember anytime you had to deal with news, you just didn't want to do it.
Yeah, because exactly. And every time something would be leaked, they're like, oh, not again. They were their own worst enemy, which is so sad.
Keep a secret in a newsroom. I mean, that's that, like, you know, that's like, I remember that, like, having grown up in newsrooms, you cannot keep a secret.
Yeah, but you know what the difference is, and here's what's so interesting. Of course, it's like now you look at NBC, and now it seems as if NBC is not as dysfunctional, obviously, as it used to be. But I just came off of an event where all of the NBC talent came out to support Hoda Kotb, and it was so nice, and it was just, you could see the warmth that they had and the love that they had towards her, as opposed to everyone trying to, like, you know, run whatever, like run roughshod over each other, and all of the people that felt that they were, you know, kind of pushed out the door. And it is nice to see that nice people are in these positions now, and hopefully that's where the trajectory will go in. Maybe that makes for boring news TV, but they're not supposed to be the story. They're supposed to share the story.
Yeah, well, there's a line in Katie's book that says, you know, at NBC, the carpets are stained with coffee. At CBS, they're stained with blood.
Yeah,
like, that's true. That's actually true.
You're so funny. But I could see that. And I think that that's something that, you know, you never get that sense of warmth at, you know, on the CBS side. Like, would you ever get it with on 60 Minutes? Between you know, all the people on that show, I'll never forget when I had my very first job, I would ride the elevators with the crew from 60 Minutes, like Andy Rooney, like the crustiest man on the planet. And you were so intimidated to be even around them.
Oh, they were horrible. And, you know, you and I both know Susan Zirinsky, who is, like, one of my favorite people in the world.
Yes.
And she's on a Z, and she became president of the news division. She got out of there so fast.
I know.
And I think it's because they didn't want change. They don't want, you know, A, she's a woman. B, it's a beast to manage that. And, you know, and she's a producer at heart. You know, she loves content. She loves, you know, telling stories. And I think the job became such minutia, and it just didn't play to her strengths. But, you know, what a loss that was.
I know. And it's sad. And it's, and now it's just about, it's funny, in the mornings, I switch between the Today Show and CBS This Morning, and there is such a difference. There really is. It's like genuine force. Genuine force.
Well, I remember when they did the overhaul of CBS This Morning, and it was Charlie, Nora, and Gail. I watched it every morning. It was brilliant. It was so good, topical. And then, you know, stuff happened.
Yeah.
And now Gail. And it's just not the same.
Yeah. No, it's not. And the thing that's sad is that, like, I don't even know the guy that they put in there he's the one who is, oh, God, he's a professional. Was he a football player or something? I think he's a football player. I don't know. Or he was a football player. Like, he's trying, what are they trying to do? It's like the ABC guy. Is it Michael? Yeah, like they're trying to like find, okay, who can we replace that would be like him?
Yeah.
It's like, no.
You know, I am pretty sure I haven't. I watch Morning Joe, 6 a.m., and it's so funny. I did one of those conservative radio stations, and I got in a fight with somebody because I said I liked Morning Joe, and this guy was like, oh, he's a communist, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, my God.
I disagree with you. I really enjoy him. I enjoy Mika. I enjoy Willie. I enjoy Mike Barnicle and the whole cast. And I really feel like I get I get a great grasp of the news and what's going on in Washington and current events and whatever. But that's what I watch. I mean, I'm like MSNBC all day.
Well, I used to be, and now I'm not as, like, on high alert, so I guess I don't care as much, you know.
Well, yeah,
but
he's not a madman in the White House anymore.
Right, exactly, so I don't have to worry about it. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like for me, you know what I love about MSNBC is looking at the backgrounds of some of the guests when they have guests on. So, like, Claire McCaskill, I love her kitchen. You know, there's, like,
funny.
Yeah, I love her. I love Claire McCaskill's kitchen. And the funniest is, did you ever see, it was Leslie Jones who used to be on SNL?
Yeah.
She was doing a whole thing during COVID where she would be, like, talking about all the MSNBC backgrounds. And she was, like, raving about Claire's, like, kitchen, too.
Oh, my
and
God.
I was like, I know I'm not crazy. I loved her background.
Oh, my God. That is so funny.
Yeah, So that's what how sad is that? It's like, I'm not even paying attention to what they're saying. I'm just looking at her backsplash.
You are too funny. By the way, speaking of books, I finished another one last night. It's called Betrayal by Jonathan Carl, who is ABC News. The final act of the Trump show.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Like, I had no idea how bad it was. He almost bombed Iran. Yes. He almost bombed Iran. And then he was going to appoint that crazy woman, Sidney Powell, special counsel to investigate, election fraud. And then he was going to declare martial law.
Are you serious?
And I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Well, hopefully, I mean, it gets me nervous because I do feel like I really don't think that that Kamala Harris is going to make it as president. Like, I just don't think it's going to happen, and I don't know what's going on.
She's, like, in hiding. Like, Have you seen her?
She's they said for she's like president today because he was having a colonoscopy. But they
right,
are supposed to last like for 10 minutes. Like I had one too, so he's probably president already again.
he's 79, you know, and like anytime someone that old goes on under anesthesia, you know, I mean, that's the hardest part about surgery is the anesthesia.
Yeah.
You know, that's the most dangerous part of it.
Well, I mean, like TMI, I had my colonoscopy this year, and I have two jokes about my colonoscopy. One is I failed it. Not that they found anything, but I wasn't, when you're ready, when you're supposed to do it, your system's supposed to be completely cleared out. And unfortunately, mine was too slow, and so now I have to go back, I think, in like 2 years and do it again. But now my running joke with my friend, because you know I've been on this weight loss like plan forever, and I'm at goal or whatever, but I joke with her and I say, yeah, I'm 3 pounds away from colonoscopy weight, because when you do a colonoscopy, you can lose like 6 pounds in 2 days. And it's been a while since I've been down to the colonoscopy weight. I still have to lose 3 more pounds to get there again. So, but Joe doesn't need to lose weight. He's skinny. So I'm sure he came out open.
But, you know, it's like, I don't know. He is like, he's such a decent man and I love him, but he is blowing it as president. Like he is just letting all these crazy things dominate the headlines. Like now you read about inflation and then you read about Afghanistan and this whole woke stuff. And it's like, can he come out and like, I don't know, take charge? And I just feel like he's kind of in the bunker.
I feel like he's just got his head down and wants to just do the whole, he wants to build back better, let's get better roads situation done. And once he has one thing in his win column, then maybe he'll start talking about other stuff. But he never was, they said he was never a foreign, like when it comes to foreign affairs, that was a strong suit. So unfortunately, it doesn't seem like anybody has that, like, really grasp. Meanwhile, did you read in the paper about what's going on in like Cancun and Tulum? And I'm going there in March.
Yeah. Well, aren't they like telling Americans not to come because they'll kill us?
They're like shooting up people. They're like, it's like a turf war. And we have a wedding in Tulum in March. I already had booked an Airbnb. I'm ready to go. And I'm looking at the news today. I said, holy crap. What is going on here?
This is crazy, but my dad worked in insurance. He passed, but my dad worked in insurance. And if you were like General Electric or like some big company, you would go to him and one of the policies you would buy, it's called a K&R policy, kidnap and recovery.
Oh my God.
Yes. And so American companies actually have insurance policies if their executives get kidnapped in Mexico or South America. And it's so prevalent. My dad's like, yeah, like we know all the kidnappers by name.
Oh my God.
They all have routing numbers. They like, it is such an industry.
Oh. And, well, they're kidnapping people. They're just outright shooting at each other. And then like people, innocent bystanders are hit. So we're not staying at a resort, which is good. We're going to like a private place, but
right.
No, I'm like, I don't need to be going into, like, gangland. It's bad enough sometimes going into the city.
Yep. No, I went to Mexico. I went to Cancun in 2010. Was it 2010? And I was like, not coming back. I mean, it was like, it's a third world country.
Well, yeah, I went to Cancun, I feel like, in the 90s. It's been a long time, maybe even before then. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've been in Cancun. And we go to Jamaica, although I haven't been there in a while. And it's funny, our friends who we're going to the wedding with in Mexico, they're like, we're never going to Jamaica. It's too dangerous. And I'm like, and going where there's, like, gang wars isn't? I don't know, but it's a little nerve-wracking, but we'll see what happens. Hopefully it'll clear up by March or we just won't go outside. We'll just lay low.
Yeah, no, I'm like, you know, it's funny. Like, you know me, I used to travel every month. I was somewhere overseas. And ever since COVID, I have no desire to get on a plane. None.
Yeah, well, I'm going Sunday. going to Florida, doing that, and then my son's coming from Chicago to Florida, and then my husband and my daughter and my mother-in-law are also coming, so I'm going to be at the airport more times this coming week than I have been in months.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting, but oh, my God, with my son, I don't even know what is going on with me, but we had done, like, about, I don't know, I guess a month ago, unfortunately, my father-in-law passed away, and we were flying him from Chicago to New York, but I had also set up a flight for him to go to Florida for our November trip, and he called me the day before he's supposed to come to New York when I had booked his flight to come home for the funeral, and he says to me, Mom, do you know you booked me to go from Chicago to Palm Beach? Did you realize that? Like, that's not going to work. So I said, oh, my God, how did I do that? So he goes ahead. He gets credit for the flight. He books the right flight. He gets himself on, and everything's fine. Then he says to me at the beginning of this week, so where's my ticket for my flight for next week? And I start checking through my emails. I can't find it. I can't find it anywhere. All that keeps coming up is a flight on October 14th going from Chicago to Florida. And I'm like, what the heck? So I don't know how I did this, but somehow I booked a ticket before my father-in-law even passed away to send Dylan to Chicago to Florida on October 14th. And I don't know what happened. So I actually had to book him a ticket because he didn't have any.
Oh, my God. You know, sometimes you do that. Like, we get so so overwhelmed with information and emails and work that sometimes I just forget. And, you know, like, I'll just be like, oh, crap, I forgot to do this. And you feel horrible, but, like, no wonder we're forgetting. Like, I literally, like, I must get 1,000 emails a day, and we're information overload.
Yeah. And, well, but the crazy thing, though, is that my poor son is always the one that I forget, and I feel so bad. And I'm like, I didn't mean it. I just, you know, everybody else, I was meticulous. Everybody else's plans were all set fine. And can you imagine, like, if he went ahead the day before and was like, wait, where's my ticket? And then if I couldn't have gotten him on a flight?
Well, that's because you have the best son in the world who is so chill and so, like, such even-tempered and, like, cool and no drama.
Right. And then I have the daughter.
Who is just incredibly talented. But, you know, like, people – I mean, by the way, Dylan is an amazing singer and songwriter and plays the guitar. But Becca is just, like, one of those people who has such fire because that's really, like, that creativity comes from. But, you know, the other side of it is, you know, they can be a little high maintenance.
Yes, they can be. Yes, they can be. But thankfully, she's enjoying right now. You know, she's working in design. She's finding her way. She's doing great so far. So I'm very happy for her, you know, being out of college and actually going in the direction that she wants to go in. And then he's equally creative and doing his thing, you know, with the music, and he's studying film. So we'll see. My hope is one day that one of them wins an Oscar and then they take me with them.
You know, exactly. I have to say, you know, when I was doing the magazine, you know, dealing with, like, talent is a very particular thing. And, like, you put up with more, you have, like, a greater patience for people who are that talented. And I remember we would have photographers and they would be late and be like, I don't care. They are, like, quality of the work that like, I'm going to give them extra time, or like someone, you know, has a demand, or someone has, you know, is, you know, doesn't want someone on the set, or someone like won't quote somebody, whatever. Like, you always give a little allowance to people who are just incredibly creative. And I feel like, so you know, you just have to know who you're dealing with.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny because, so my, you know, my daughter, she's into the, you know, she's into fashion design and loves, like, designing, like, couture dresses. And this summer, she was supposed to do a dress for me for our anniversary. And I kept on bugging her. I was the typical Beverly Goldberg. So, are you working on my dress? So, are you going to do my dress? When are you going to do my dress? sure enough, she, you know, she's a last minute Charlie kind of person. And I wind up getting, we were leaving on our trip. We were going away, the four of us. And she texts me at midnight and she says, "Mommy, I'm so sorry, but I didn't have enough material and I thought it was going to work and it just didn't. And I'll make it up to you. I'm still waiting for the dress. I'm still, but it was one of those things where she thought she had it. She had it down. It was going to be fine. Stop nagging me. I'll do it." And it didn't work out. And so now it's, you know, I haven't bugged her about it again, but I still am waiting for a dress. I still want her to make me something.
You'll get it. And by the way, her stuff, every time you send me a photo of her stuff, it is just breathtaking.
Yeah, she's super talented and she's getting to actually be involved in the design process. She's at Rebecca Taylor right now and they're involving her and it's exciting as they're developing their, you know, lines for next year and learning so much. And I, you know, I love that, you know, here, this is a big company and they are just throwing her in and they value her opinion and they're really good to her. And so I'm excited for her because normally you hear about the fashion industry, like, oh, this person's horrible. Oh, it's cutthroat. And I do believe, I honestly do believe that the people that are in the, you know, the one-off people, the couture designers that really have small shops, they absolutely are kind of insipid and have those narcissistic tendencies.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
But she's in an environment right now where, you know, and she had that kind of experience and she's now in an environment where it is more corporate and you don't have that cutthroatness in your, in her everyday, you know, experience. And so it's been nice because it's like she's getting solid training, which is what she needs.
Well, you know, I touch on this on my book and Becca is one of the people who have it. So talent is so rare, right? And by the way, talent is the most democratic thing in the world because you can't buy it. Either happens or it doesn't. It happens mm-hmm. to rich people. It happens to poor people. It happens. It just, you're born with it. It is a calling. It is something like DNA, right? You either have it or you don't. And Becca has it. Dylan has it with music. You and I have it with writing and whatever. But we have to. Well, you and I do so many things. But like one of, we have to stop coddling people and telling everybody has talent.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. And I know that sounds horrible, but there are people who are more talented than others.
Yeah, there are.
Sorry. I hate saying that, but, you know, it's true. And we have to stop telling people that, you know, you can learn to write. No, you can't. You either have it or you don't.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's so funny because I have, like, one of my high school girlfriends. She called me yesterday, and she's in the banking industry. And she says, all right, I need you for 3 seconds. I'm forwarding an email to you. I need you to zhuzh it up for me because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Right. It's like, okay. You know, it's sort of like, yeah, fine. I mean, I can't do a spreadsheet or, you know, a QuickBook, so I got you. Like, there are things that I have my limitations in. But you're right. There are certain things for us that is as natural as breathing, and we take it for granted. And yet for me as a writer, I don't think that I'm as great a writer as many people. So I get very, I had this conversation with a friend of mine yesterday where, you know, when there are certain things in your life that you truly want, sometimes you're very careful about going for it because if you get rejected, it'll be the ultimate rejection.
Yes.
And that's something I've faced in my own life. Like I feel that there are things that I backed away from because I didn't, you know, because I was rejected in life, but then if I got rejected at that level, I would have been shattered. So I didn't do it. And that's what I don't want for my children. Like I definitely want them to go for it and not to feel that pressure of, oh, if I fail, it's over for me. And I think a lot of people go through that, the imposter syndrome, but on top of it, the fear factor of, I don't want to go for it because I'm afraid that if I don't make it, I'm going to feel like the ultimate failure and I'm not going to come back from this.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. Like I am the opposite because, you know, through my career, I have, you know, I've worked for some really tough bosses and it's been beaten out of me. Like my ego, like honestly, like I'm at the point where I don't have an ego, you know, and like, I have no fear of rejection. Like, if you don't like it, fine.
That's good, though. That's really good.
Yeah, I just don't care. You know, okay, then you don't like it, fine. But, you know, rejection actually builds character. You know, it makes you stronger, and it builds, you know, it gives you a greater resolve. It's not a bad thing.
No, it does. I mean, I just think that it's like when people are succeeding in their career, though, and it's like succeeding in a career where you've played it safe, so that because the thing that you really, really want, it would, you know, once you reach that place, it's like, I don't know if I'd want to do that. I don't know if I'd want to go and be rejected at the thing that I really, really want, because I've been successful my whole life. So why should I put that in my lose column, you know?
Wow.
But I'm seeing it. Like, it's not just me. I mean, I have a friend who's a big, high-achieving, successful individual who is facing that right now, too. And it's tough, you know, because no matter what age you're at, you always still have that, you know, it's the sense of, I say it's like, you know, you always want to be appreciated, or at least in our field, like, you know, and Darren, you know, jokes about it with me all the time. He's like, you would rather be appreciated for what you do than get paid well. And I'm like, yes, so.
You know, though, I do feel like I don't have anything more to prove. Like, I feel like I want to do, there's a lot more I want to do, but I don't feel the need to prove to anybody that what I can do.
Right. I get that. Well, but the thing is that you don't have anything to prove in your chosen field. But if you were to go ahead tomorrow and start something completely new and that was foreign to you, it's nerve-wracking, you know. But I think at the same time, it's also exciting if you do start something new to be learning and growing. And, you know, I kind of feel like within our industry in PR, I mean, and you and I have had this conversation. It's like you get bored with it. It's just there's certain elements of it that are monotonous, and it's so difficult to get to people these days, and reporters don't get back to you, and you know, it's very, very frustrating. So I have spent my career always coming up with new ideas to make it fun and interesting, because otherwise you're going to bang your head against the wall. You know, you're like a hamster on a wheel.
Yep. And you know, the thing with me is, and you're kind of the opposite. Like, I don't feel like I have that fire in my belly anymore, in terms of like wanting to change the world.
Right.
Like climb the ladder, like do something bold. I feel like I'm really satisfied with what I've done, but I just don't have that fire anymore. You know, I still like what I do, but I don't have that desire to, like, you know, climb to the top of the mountain.
See, I kind of feel like I jumped off the mountain when I was really young and, you know, going off on my own. So I still have a climb to go, and maybe it's like the fighting back the ageism thing, but I feel like I do have something to prove, that it's, you know, I don't care that I'm a woman in my 50s. People look at me and they think I'm in my like late 30s, early 40s, whatever. And that's great. But at the same time, I have so much experience and I can run circles around so many people, but my age is something that holds me back, and I want to be able to prove that that shouldn't be the case. And
it should not be the case at all.
Yeah. And there's a lot to be said about the wisdom and the experience and the confidence that you have, you know, that you've built out up over the years. And I have to say, like, the other day, it's almost like when I go from being super busy to things starting to slow down as we go into the holidays, I take stock in, like, okay, is this what I'm supposed to be doing with my life? Where did I go wrong? And I start, like, opening up my drawers and looking, like, going through, like, you know, taking a trip down memory lane. And I found a file from when I left CBS, and I had all these pictures on my wall. And you were one of them. It was you, me, and Kim. Like, I have a picture of us. And as I'm looking through, I'm like, oh, that's the cast of Raymond ringing the bell at the stock exchange. Oh, that was me and Phil Togas and the Amazing Race. Oh, that's me and the CSI people. And I start thinking to myself, I'm like, damn, I did a lot of cool stuff. Like, wow.
Yeah.
This was cool.
You have to, like, pat yourself. And that, you know, I sent you that email So you did the Women in Communications, the Matrix Award Gala.
Yes.
And I said, I'll never forget, the next day I said, you know, you need to stop and smell the roses because you planted them.
I know.
You planted them. So smell them because, like, you don't give yourself enough credit.
Well, because it's all, you know, because it's the never enough. Like, oh, I tried to get these people there and this people there and this one and that one, and then they weren't there. And then I come to find out the same night as our event was, like, Meghan Markle and Prince Harry were at an event. I'm like, oh please, I fold.
Damn those two. You know, I call them my two favorite idiots on live radio.
Oh, man. Well,
like, that's going to come back at me.
Well, but... You know what? It's one of those things where it's like, oh, they show up. It's like them or the Kardashians. If you're planning a media event and they're doing something that night in your area, you're screwed. Forget it.
Exactly. Done. Like, every news wants them. Like, you can't compete. You just can't.
Right.
And, I mean, the fact that you got who you got is a miracle.
Well, but I also look at it like I love doing media partnerships now. I love making it bigger and figuring out how does it work for you and how does it work for us and how do we equally get ourselves the exposure and the goodwill by joining forces. And that's so much more beneficial than a one-liner in, you know, an Entertainment Tonight or an extra. And the things with those shows anyway is that they're the exact same things every day. Prince Harry, Meghan Markle,
I know. And we work in media, and, like, it's so strange because it used to be that, like, you can get a hit on ET or some other platform, and you knew it was going to get viewers or readers.
Right.
Now, we don't know who's reading and watching these things, right? Like, it's all over the place. Like, people are like, oh, no, our live stream. Oh, no, our Tinder podcast or our Twitter or whatever it is. It's so fragmented, and sometimes I don't even know if anybody's getting our message.
I know. Well, because it's so curated. It's really anything that goes into your feed. So if you talk about it, it'll show up on your phone. So it's a matter of figuring out how to leverage that placement that you had to get into somebody's feed when they're talking about it and Big Brother's listening to you so they can run it through your... You know, whatever it is that you're consuming. But
I remember there used to, remember back in the day, like in the 90s with Tom Shales gave your show a good review, it would affect the numbers.
Yep.
Like you would get a bump, you would get more viewers. That does not exist anymore.
No. That people don't even know who he is, you know, who the reviewers are anymore.
But that doesn't happen anymore.
Well, the funniest is that when I watch movies now with Darren, it's always based on the Rotten Tomato factor. And it annoys me because I saw that with Rotten Tomatoes that more men actually vote on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's kind of skewed because if I'm looking at a romantic comedy, he's totally, it's going to be bashed because there's not enough women being in. So.
By the way, speaking of bashing movies, I went to the James Bond movie.
Okay. Bad.
Horrible.
I'm not a James Bond fan. Have to tell you, I'm not a James Bond fan.
Oh,
never was.
My God. 3 hours of nonsense. And I didn't even get it. Like, I came home and I had to Google what the plot was. I did not understand it. And I saw our friend Rob Shooter a week later. And I said, hey, what did you think of the Bond movie? And he's like, I have no idea what happened.
That's so funny.
Like, we went to college. I literally, there were so many twists and so, you know, I love these supervillains too because they always want to like take over the world or they want to steal this money. You know, they have a lair and like built in the side of a mountain. And it's like, well, if you need money, don't build the mountain. Like, lower your payroll. You've got like thousands of men with guns. Like, just lower your costs.
So funny. Lower your costs. your overhead's too high. Maybe you wouldn't be angry about your finances if you didn't have a a $10 million lair built on the side of a mountain. I get it.
$10 million on the side of a mountain. you know, you're launching rockets, you've got secret yachts. I'm like, just don't do that and you'll have lots of money.
Well, maybe not. But yeah, you know, we haven't gone to a movie in person in I don't even know how long. And not that I miss it, because I feel like unless the movie already is vetted that it's a good movie, I don't want to go and see it.
Right.
And the only thing, like, I haven't watched Dear Evan Hansen yet. I have it, you know, on whatever the on-demand thing is. I'm waiting for the price to come down so it's not $19.99. When it's $5.99, I think I'll order it. But not $19.99.
There's this luxury theater, like, a block away from me, CMX or some stupid acronym, and tickets are $30.
Oh, please.
And you go in and there's like a recliner with a blanket, and then they come and they give you a menu and you order lunch or dinner. Okay, first of all, the last thing I want to hear during a movie is someone eating steak.
That's okay. Too funny. Well, we did that. It was used to be iPick movie, and they went out of business, and now there's a new place coming in that's the same thing, but it's a fortune.
Yeah.
And they still drink
$100, because, like, okay, your ticket's 30, then your meal is 30, so that with tip, you're, like, looking at, like, okay, that's 70, and then if you get a drink, or if you get, like, you know, a side, or, you know, a soda, you're at $100 for a movie.
You better put a Broadway show at that point.
Yeah, like, stay home, order pizza, watch Netflix.
Yeah, exactly. It's much easier, much cheaper.
Yeah.
We just watched some, some Casey Affleck movie where he was depressed again. He was a psychiatrist. And
Was that that C movie or like something like a director? I don't even know. I saw
the Stalker goes after his wife and his daughter, like, and after his girlfriend, like, kills her, or he kills the girlfriend. I don't know. It was just... Really, it was intense, and I felt as if it was like that movie Fear, I hated that movie, but that was also like, didn't like that one. Although yesterday we watched the one with Halle Berry, The Call. Oh, that one is intense. Did you ever see that?
Oh, that, the one with, I don't know, The Call, what was that?
He's a 911 operator and like a serial killer is like killing blonde girls, and it's Abigail Breslin gets trapped in the booth. Yeah.
I saw that. Yeah, that was intense.
I know. So we watched that last night and I was like, oh my God. But the thing is that here we are watching movies that we've already seen that we know are good. I'd rather invest in a movie I know is good than waste my time with something that's just going to totally blow chunks.
I know. And it was so depressing because there I am. Like, I was so happy to finally go to a movie, and it was 3 hours of nonsense.
Yeah. And that's sad.
What was going on. And I'm like, I'm pretty smart. I don't understand this.
Yeah.
And the super villain had a magic pond. And it was a mountain on a private island. And there was DNA, there was smart DNA with nanotechnology. And I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. None.
Yeah, not interested. That I would so not. I'd be walking by, like, I'd probably walk out of the movie. We have actually walked out of movies before. We walked out of Cloud Atlas. We've walked out of Tom Hanks. Yeah, that was like Tom Hanks. He's a hit or miss kind of guy.
Yep.
So that was not a good one. But yeah, we're not taking our chances on those things. We'd rather... you know, spend our money on a nice dinner out, or, you know, we haven't gone back to seeing shows. We did see Chicago in concert over the summer and haven't done anything much since, but, you know, we're going to Florida. So that'll be our next thing to go out. But,
well, you know,
yeah.
I saw the remake. Well, quote unquote saw, I went to the remake of Blade Runner. Like, I loved the 80, I think it was 83 with Harrison Ford and Rutger Hauer. I loved it. So they remade it with, like, Ryan Gosling and other people. So I get there, and I forgot my glasses. And I am nearsighted, so I can't see far. And I'm like, it shouldn't be bad. The screen, it was all text, like, for, like, 5 slides. And it explained everything that was going on. I couldn't read any of it. Then the movie starts, and I have no idea where they are, what century, who is what. There's all these different half-breeds, and I was like, I have no idea what's going on, and I left.
Too funny.
Yeah. I'm like, I can't see the screen.
That's what happened. I forgot my glasses yesterday. We went out and I was like, I hope I could read the menu, because you can't you can't zoom in on the menu. Well, you could use your phone to zoom in on it, but other than that, it's usually I like bringing my glasses with me for menu reading. That's about it.
Well, I can read a menu because I'm nearsighted, so I'm fine at my computer, my phone. It's just this screen, anything that's a little far, can't see. At night. Watching TV, I can't see the on-screen. I can't see Amazon. I can't see Netflix. So I just look to see if people are good-looking.
So I have to tell you, this is the funniest thing. So Dylan had a film class this semester, an editing class, and they had to take a movie and turn it in and do a trailer for the movie, but change the genre completely. So he took Wedding Crashers. And he made it like a romantic drama. Can you imagine?
I love it.
It really came out good. I have to send it to you. But it was like all the heavy parts of the movie. He pulled that all together and put it in a trailer. And then he set it to some Led Zeppelin song. And it was like intense. It was so good.
Amazing. He is so talented.
Yeah, he's fun, you know. It's like he's super creative, and we tell him all the time, because my mother-in-law has like all these unbelievable stories in her past that are insane, like the kind of people that she was with and knew and whatever. And I'm like, you just need to do like a brain dump with Grandma Sally so that you can do a Netflix series based on her life. So just get to it, because you know.
Oh, you should have invited him to my party on Monday.
Can I say what I told you or no?
No, don't mention that name.
I won't mention that name, but you had an eclectic group of people in the room. It was a room filled with people who were very much excited with the things that they do.
I would say this. I would say, so we had Princess Diana's secret voice coach, who is also her best friend. Then we had the woman who created perfumes for Tiffany and Burberry, and now she's working with COVID victims on restoring their scent. And then we had a man who works with classical musicians, and he's performed opera around the world. He's from Detroit. And then we had,
something, screenwriter, director, and actress, right? Like she was, was another one.
Everybody was so eclectic and a character, and bringing them all together, it was, Dylan would have had a field day with this.
Right? I that's what I said to you afterwards. God. I was like, I couldn't keep up because I was so boring and normal.
Oh my God.
I was like, wait, and you do what? Huh? That's just crazy town. But yeah, that was, you definitely had an interesting group in the room. It was fun.
Oh yeah, it was really
yeah, we're ending soon. We have 90 seconds left. Can you believe this? We have a lot to go.
Well, you know what happens? You and I just talk so naturally that we forget we're doing a show.
I know. I mean, we just go from one topic to the next, but we really had a lot to, we did cover a lot of ground today. And, you know, there's definitely, I guess we have to bring back guests. We'll have to do that. We'll have to figure out who we want to bring back either before the holidays. I mean, all your eclectic people, I kind of feel like let's pick one. I mean, we had Stuart, so who do we bring on?
Sue Phillips is a great interview. She is so she knows everything about fragrance and history and Coco Chanel and why fragrance and scent is the most powerful sensation that you have in your body. She's fascinating.
All right, so then she's our next guest.
Yeah, she's our next guest.
Lock her up. I don't mean lock her up, but just lock her up as a guest.
Yes, absolutely.
Because then that'll get me canceled if I say lock her up.
Yeah, no, no locking.
Nobody's getting locked. Nobody's getting hit. Nobody's getting anything. We just are, you know, Jenna.
right, we got 7 seconds. 6, 5.
I know.
Four.
So thank you for joining us, everyone. And we'll be back again real soon.
All right.
All right. Bye.
Bye.